The World Cup kicks off today, but global sponsors aren't playing ball like before, and soul-searching in Britain as it marks 1 year since a deadly high-rise fire. This is the Marketplace Morning Report, live from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. First, though, the Federal Reserve delivered a rate rise yesterday. Now the ball is in the European Central Bank's court. The ECB is currently buying $35 billion worth of assets, including bonds, each month. But today, investors are expecting it to say how and when it'll start scaling back those purchases. Michael Hewson is Chief Market Strategist at CMC Markets.
Mr. Draghi's in a bit of a bind at the moment because he's operating against a backdrop of slowing economic data and inflation that is starting to move back to target. And there's also the fact that there's a significant possibility that the new Italian government could start to increase spending plans in defiance of EU fiscal rules. Ultimately, there is a clear and present danger that the ECB could be starting to scale back their asset purchase program at precisely the time that the European economy is starting to slow. Unfortunately, he's boxed in by some of the more hawkish members of the Governing Council who want to curtail the asset purchase program at a time when they see that inflation is starting to hedge higher. I think he'll try and push any final decision towards the July meeting, but ultimately I still expect that there will be some form of announcement that asset purchases will be ending sometime this year.
There is an argument to say that 10 years on from the financial crisis, the ECB should scale back its asset purchases, whatever might be happening in various Eurozone economies.
That's a perfectly valid argument. I think the timing to have done it would have been, say, 12 months ago. Let's not forget, ultimately, the structural problems within the euro area that caused Mario Draghi to signal that he would do whatever it takes to preserve the euro are still there. So I think it's very unlikely, even if we do see an end to asset purchases this year, that we will see any significant move in rates much before the end of 2019.
Michael Hewson, let's do the numbers. That ECB decision comes later this morning. Meanwhile, Asian and European markets are solidly lower. Keeping investors on edge is the more hawkish stance on future rate rises from the Fed and continued trade tension between the US and China. Now, the World Cup starts today, but sponsorship of the huge global tournament hasn't kicked off. Several big names like Johnson & Johnson pulled out after FIFA's 2015 corruption scandals. They've been replaced by Chinese sponsors, but overall revenue is still down. Toby Hoare, head of marketing company J. Walter Thompson Europe, says there is this little backdoor called social media that non-official sponsors could exploit.
It's all about listening to the conversation in real time, and then tapping into it at that specific moment. I would be very surprised if we don't see some of the big sports brands playing a role, because they are traditionally clever and opportunistic, and they understand the consumer very well.
So in this new advertising environment, who wins?
I think the brands, but also I think the consumers, the people watching the game. One of the great things for the brands, it's not just people having a conversation on social media, it's that they're fired up, they're highly charged. They're not just talking to one group of people from one country, it's much, much more diverse.
That's Toby Hoare. Now, Britain is marking 1 year since a high-rise fire that killed 72 Londoners and revealed just how deadly inequality here can be. Grenfell Tower housed working families, refugees and immigrants. It's located in the Royal Borough of Kensington and Chelsea, one of the richest, most expensive areas in the entire country. The BBC's Mark Easton takes us back to what happened and what's changed.
The fire broke out shortly after midnight. My phone went off at the side of my bed in the early hours, and I was at the scene by about 4:30 in the morning.
How is that possible?
It's jumped up all while on the flat.
By that stage, the building was very much alight, smoke pouring out of every window.
The fire brigade are on their way.
I knew at that stage that there were still scores of people inside, so we were aware that this was a tragedy that was happening right before our eyes.
Soon I left the building with my daughter, and I turned and I saw half of the building burning. I just left my daughter with stranger and I ran back inside. I went to the second floor and then I've been stopped. I thought I lost him. I didn't want to turn back after 20 minutes to my daughter and say to her, I don't think your dad's coming out. I don't think he can make it.
Britain's social housing isn't like America's, located miles away from the city centre. It's often right next door to multi-million dollar homes. But proximity doesn't mean equality. Residents say they were completely ignored when they pointed out multiple fire safety hazards. One major cause was the use of flammable plastic panels to refurbish the outside of the building.
A local authority instigated and oversaw the refurbishment of a social housing high-rise tower block in such a way as to render it a death trap.
So did the Grenfell fire change the conversation around inequality in Britain? The BBC's Mark Easton again.
Here we are reflecting on a year since that tragedy, and there are still 43 families who are living in temporary hotel accommodation. When it comes to the safety work, we've discovered hundreds of other tower blocks all over Britain which have got the same kind of unsafe panels on the outside. And of those hundreds of buildings, only 10 have actually seen safety work completed. And that's part of the problem, the lack of trust that exists between the part of the population that lives in places like Grenfell Tower and the high-ups, the elite who run the country. That gap, I think, was exposed as wide, and I'm not sure that anything that's happened in the last year has really narrowed that gap.
That's Mark Easton, and I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.